Hey, this is Foundations Recovery Live. I'm Megan, the creator and host of Foundations Recovery Live, a peer recovery podcast. As a reminder, by having a peer recovery podcast, that means that I am not licensed or certified in any type of medical outlet whatsoever. I am working towards that and going to school for that, but I do not hang anything on my wall saying that I am qualified to give definitive medical advice. And that's not what I'm doing. I am a peer who has had substance abuse and lived a life with addiction and in an environment with addiction, and have actually gone through substance abuse treatment, inpatient treatment. So I have experience, and the point of this podcast is to share those experiences to help others who are dealing with substance abuse and addiction. And my guests who are on any of my episodes are here for the same purpose. So with that said, this week I am talking about socializing and the difficulties and how to navigate through socializing with an addict or even with a recovering addict. Now, I came across this article a few months ago during the holiday season, because it's entitled Navigating Addiction in the Holiday Season, and it's from Kelly E. Green. She's a PhD and LP, and in this article, she kind of goes through some ways and advice to navigate through situations where an event is being hosted and the possibility of somebody who is a substance abuser or even somebody who's in recovery is going to attend that event and the feelings that are wrapped around all of that. And this really resonated with me because, you know, about 15, 20 years ago, even, when my mom was more involved in my life, she would oftentimes come to family gatherings and other events that I would host at my house, even holidays. And honestly, I would have so much anxiety about her being present at any social event. I was so embarrassed by her behaviors, because she was under the influence of so many different things, and with her mental health status at the time, she was already very erratic as it was. So to then have these things helping with that behavior, it just was so exacerbated, and it just was too much for, you know, her daughter, who was in her 20s and just becoming an adult. It just was a lot. And so I was always afraid that by her being in these social settings with me, that people would associate her behavior to me and that I would be looked at as, I guess, basically a spawn of her, right? Like, if she's this way, oh, Megan must be that way. And so it weighed on me for a very, very, very long time. So coming across this article, like, honestly, until I read this article, I literally felt the same way that I did 20 years ago about my mom and social situations until I read this article, and I felt like such a punk ass because I felt this way for so long, and here was kind of, I guess you could say, an easy fix. So let me go into it. So again, this is an article from Kelly E. Green. She's a PhD and LP, and her article is titled Navigating Addiction in the Holiday Season, if you want to look it up and get into the details of it. I'm just kind of skimming the surface. So the first thing that caught my attention was she says, let your values guide you instead of your fears. And this hit me because there were a lot of times when I would consider trying to find a way out of having to invite my mom to any type of social event that I was going to be at, including family gatherings like Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthday parties. And so what Kelly E. Green is saying here is don't outright exclude a person, because social support is actually a powerful resource. Now, you can take the social support as a powerful resource however you want and however you can adapt it into your life and your situation. And how I adapt that to my situations from the past is, you know, my mom's addiction was driven heavily because of mental health problems that she had, and she could never get the right combination of medication to make her feel normal. So she self-medicated, okay? So in hindsight, to think of her as being in a social place where she's able to socialize with people, and possibly intake a reduced amount of medication and alcohol because she's busy socializing, hindsight makes me feel a little better and, you know, allows me to believe that by having her in those social settings probably could have saved her life, because later on in life, after not having those social settings and her being quite a hermit, there were some really sketchy situations where, you know, she was alone. So, like I said, hindsight, it makes me believe that those times were actually powerful for her and probably saving her emotions, if nothing else. I mean, I wouldn't quite say it was saving her life by being in those social settings, but I do think that it was saving her emotions and saving her mental health a little bit. But, I will admit that I did consider excluding her and not inviting her. But, you know, just the human decency, and I would really hope that we all have that. The human decency in me would not allow me to do that. So, thankfully, I guess you could say I'm falling in line so far with this article. I never excluded my mother from any social interactions or gatherings, her socializing, I do believe, was a powerful resource. The next tidbit that I took from this article that I felt was really important and kind of profound was, she says to de-emphasize alcohol at social gatherings, but do not eliminate it altogether. So I recognize this in this regard. It's kind of obvious. I mean, we can all sit back and be realistic about life right now. And when you think about going to a party, whether you struggle with addiction or not, there is always alcohol there, if not other things too that other people are into that they might bring, okay? But even if it's not an event that specifically says like cocktail party or like, you know, a drunk fest or anything like that, people typically will bring their own adult beverage for their own enjoyment and or to share. So if you remove that, I think that that would be like a huge red flag that someone who is struggling with addiction or just coming out of recovery would notice right away. And that like puts a huge neon arrow over them, like, oh, we're doing this because of this person right here. You know, and that does not make somebody feel comfortable. And it does not, definitely does not help them if they are on the road to recovery. And you never know, it could trigger an addict to have some erratic, explosive behavior because of it, because of hurt feelings, right? That backfires, and they might feel feelings of distrust, and like now they're ruining the party for everybody else because alcohol's not here or the addict's here, so nobody can have alcohol and the party's ruined, right? So think of this. If you are the person hosting a party and you know that somebody who's struggling with addiction or is coming out of recovery, just know this. If someone really wants to use drugs or alcohol, they're going to find a way whether you serve it or not. So, like I said, in reality, yes, a lot of parties you have alcohol there for people to enjoy, but for the most part, people are bringing it with them, their own preferred beverage of choice. So, same with that addict. That addict is going to bring their own beverage, adult beverage, if that's what they choose. So you're not going to be able to like hold them back from doing that. And if they're on a mission, they're on a mission, and there's no getting in their way of that. So I will say though, something that I thought about that kind of took me back to my past as well, because my dad was a heavy drinker for a long time as well, until he found out that he had hepatitis and he had to stop drinking to survive, basically. But he started drinking non-alcoholic beverages. And when I read this part of the article, it made me think of that time when my dad would drink non-alcoholic beverages in social settings. And it made me think, hey, you know, if you're going to be serving alcohol, maybe have alternative choices for people to choose from. Or if you are the recovering addict going to a social event and everybody's bringing their own stuff anyways, bring your own stuff and bring a mocktail or a non-alcoholic beer or a non-alcoholic champagne. There's so, so many choices. And you know, a lot of times, I mean, I can only really speak for myself, but a lot of times, people, when we drink as humans, we do it in a social setting because it's just kind of like comfortable and normal and it feels good. And you're standing in a circle of friends and you've got your drink in one hand and you're just talking away, like doing your thing. And so if it makes you feel more comfortable and makes you feel like you're accepted by having that drink in your hand, there are a ton, especially nowadays, a ton of non-alcoholic alternatives that you could use and bring with you to help you in that situation and be social. And it's great. So the third thing that I took away from this article, and like I said, this is just me personally having my own takeaways from this article as it relates to the history that I have had with addicts in my lifetime and in my environment. So this third point that I took was connect instead of control. So connect with other people and get to know other people, and instead of trying to control the situation, right? So like immerse yourself into the party, but not the alcohol. Does that make sense? Like we have parties because we want to socialize with our friends and our family. And we want to have a good time. And a lot of people, you know, use alcohol to kind of amplify having a good time. And people can do that. Okay. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Some people have complete and total control over their alcohol consumption and some people don't. And unfortunately for the people who don't, that's why we're having this conversation today. But let's connect with people, you know, and just talk to them. This kind of goes back to my episode about stigma in just getting to know people, you know, and just talking to them and like being a human to another human being. I don't think people realize how far human decency goes when you're interacting with another human being. And that little bit of human kindness can really make or break somebody, especially in addiction. I'm just going to tell you that and put that out there, food for thought. So what this particular part of the article, the detail that Kelly really pointed out with connect instead of control is this. You are not responsible. None of us are responsible for whether the person stays sober or not. You cannot control their addiction or recovery, but you can choose to connect with them in meaningful ways. So a lot of times stigma keeps us from having compassion and kindness or even a smidgen of understanding for another human being. That's why I'm talking about human decency. So I'm going to leave you with this question. What would you do if the person struggling with addiction were instead struggling with bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or even Alzheimer's? Would you still not invite them to a party? Would you still exclude them? Would you remove things that would trigger these diseases that they have? Just think about it that way. And, you know, we have to understand, here's a thing for everybody out there to understand. For those that we can get into substance abuse treatment and get them on a path of recovery, we are providing tools and we are teaching these people who have addictions and substance use disorders how to leave their 30-day, 60-day, 90-day stint in treatment and go back into the real world and be able to handle all of these situations, including socializing. Like, it is the norm to socialize and to be at social gatherings. And for most people, it is the norm to have alcoholic beverages there. And for the population that can't control their alcohol consumption and that has turned them into an addict and into a substance abuser, they're going to be put in those situations. And it's our responsibility as treatment providers and medical clinicians to give them the tools to be able to support themselves in these situations. So we actually want people in recovery to be exposed to these social situations so that they could utilize their tools. Because if they're not utilizing them, they're just going to go to waste. And, you know, years down the road when they are in those situations, they're not going to remember any of the tools because they never exercised them. So, from the perspective of the host of a social gathering, don't exclude that person. And I can say that now from personal experience, like, don't exclude them. Even if you have thoughts of anxiety and like, oh, how is this going to be? What's going to happen? I really hope that they don't act out. I hope that they don't start a fight with this person. I hope that this, believe me, I've had all of those thoughts, even to this day with not my mother, with other people. Like, I have those thoughts. They're natural humanistic thoughts to have. But in lieu of those thoughts, let's give people the opportunity. And, you know, those who are struggling with addiction, just know that they're going to do it regardless of whether or not it's placed there for them in a social setting or not. And for somebody who's in recovery, just know that they're given tools, and sometimes these types of social settings are tests for them to exercise the tools that they were given, and you actually could be helping them grow stronger as a person and stronger in their recovery. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So I'm going to leave you with that. That's my rant about socializing in addiction, after addiction, in your recovery journey. And, you know, as always, I do hope that you take something away from this, from either perspective. I've lived on both sides of the coin, so I feel fortunate enough that I can share both sides of the coin, and hopefully relate to just even just one person out there. So that's it. I do welcome you to go check out our website. You can find all of our podcast episodes there, from stigma to an interview with me and my sister talking about our lives growing up with environment filled with addiction. And this episode, they're all there for you to download and listen to, check out. On our website, we also have updates about the opening of our inpatient substance abuse treatment center in Arizona. We're working really, really hard at getting that open this year, and I'm really excited. We've had a lot of really awesome feedback the last couple of weeks. Like, we've had so much interest in people who are motivated for us, which is such a great feeling. So, you know, watch us on our website and just see how we're progressing. You can visit us at www.foundationsrecoverytc.com. We are also on social media. Our handles are at Foundations Recovery. We're on Instagram and Facebook, and you can have access to links to our individual episodes through the platform that I utilize. And there's also a list of all the like directories that hold and give access to our podcast, like iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Spotify, all of those, big to small. We're available on all of them to just look us up, Foundations Recovery Live, and you can listen to our episodes anytime you want. And if you follow us, anytime a new episode is uploaded, you will have immediate access to it. So I hope that you support us there. Support us on our website, support us on social media, support, 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 like, follow, and share, all that good stuff. Get us out there. We are really motivated and driven to make an impact on people's lives, on everybody's lives, honestly. Like, whether you're an addict or not, you know, we want to make an impact on an addict's life and get them the treatment and recovery that they need and in the form in which they would thrive the best. But we also want to provide resources and support for those who are the support systems for addicts. And like I said, I've lived on both sides of the coin, so both of those arenas are very important. If you have anything that you would like to share, have discussed, you have questions, would like to be a guest, you can email us at foundationsrecoverytc@gmail.com. We've been getting a lot of responses on our podcast there as well. So, good things happening. We're growing. We're starting to see some feedback and some support, and I love it. And I just hope that you continue to support us in all of these different avenues. And next week, the topic that I should be discussing, I'm waiting to hear from my guests to see if they're committed, is employment in recovery. I'm kind of going to switch gears, and instead of being more peer recovery oriented and focus, I want to talk about how, you know, we kind of pay it forward, I guess you could say. You know, people who are in recovery who want to then turn around and mentor the next person who's going through recovery, and how that looks by being an employee in recovery. So stay tuned for that. And I really thank you and have so much gratitude for those who are listening and supporting us. And I hope that you continue to support us and listen to us. And I hope that you have a blessed week with so much love and joy and happiness and positivity and growth. And from Foundations Recovery Live, this is Megan, and I thank you.